Hello, everyone, and welcome back to James Cameron's Titanic Scene by Scene. I'm Brittany Butler.
I'm Ethan Brim.
And today we are talking about Can Anybody Hear Me? That's the name of the scene on the scene selection. Although it's not really said like that. It's, can anybody hear me? Just like...
Can anybody hear me?
He was not asking politely. He was very desperate in this moment. But yeah, speaking of the scene selections, I was able to find like a list of them online because I couldn't get my Blu-ray player to work and I needed to know what they were, so I looked them up. And it's funny, so according to the original DVD scene selection, there's a total of 30 scenes. And right now we're going into, this will be scene 24, I think? I mean, from our episodes, the way we're divvying everything up, this is scene 24 for us. Mm-hmm. So, according to the original DVD, we only have 6 scenes to go or something.
Very long scenes.
That's just kind of funny to me because that's how long the original DVD divided the scenes.
Yeah.
There's like a million scenes in one chapter, you know? So on the Blu-ray scene selections, there's 64 scenes.
Yeah, so it's like 3 minutes long each, basically.
And so we're kind of somewhere in the middle with the way I've been trying to do it. So
yeah.
Odds are we probably have a little less than 20 scenes left to go.
Yeah.
Maybe, I think. Which isn't bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It is halfway over, like we've said. But yeah, so those were my calculations. We're 24 scenes in, probably got a little under 20 scenes left to go, maybe.
That's perfect. Yeah, that sounds good.
So before we get into it, I do have a little email I'd like to read as well as part of a Letterboxd review that I really want to read because it was just very interesting to me. So the email is from Rosie. And the subject is thank you with a white heart emoji. And they say, Dear Brittany and Ethan, hi, my name is Rosie and I'm a 15-year-old girl from Brighton. Firstly, I wanted to say, Brittany, thank you so, so much for your incredibly pure and insightful view into Titanic carrying from when you were little to now as an adult. Your joy and love of Titanic radiates through your voice and could genuinely light up a room. Thank you for letting us into your brilliant mind. I don't know if I'd call my mind brilliant, but thank you for the compliment.
Why not?
And Ethan, thank you for your insanely invaluable contributions and perceptions. I find myself oohing and aahing at almost everything you say, and light bulb moments are almost a given. I read this fact the other day. I don't know if you guys know, but it's said that Titanic lasts 2 hours and 47 minutes, the same time it took for the actual Titanic to sink. And the iceberg scene in the film lasts 37 seconds, which is how long it actually lasted back in 1912. I was just wondering your guys' opinion on this. Your voices always cheer me up and make my day, so thank you incredible amounts for bringing this joy and love into the world. Lots of love from England. Thank you, Rosie. And she's...
Wow, thank you, yeah.
She's probably 17 by now as well. I went back into our emails and yeah, she's probably 17 by now. So
she probably resents us now for not reading this earlier.
But thank you so much, Rosie. We appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. Wow.
And those lovely compliments. And yeah, so... Interesting. I don't know if we ever mentioned this before, but if you take out the frame story, 2 hours and 40 minutes is how long it took Titanic to sink. Just the 1912 scenes are also almost exactly 2 hours and 40 minutes, which is pretty cool. So with the 37 seconds thing, I think they're referring to, it was 37 seconds from the time they spotted the iceberg to the moment they collided with it.
Got it. Okay.
So that was literally, it was only 37 seconds from the time they saw it to the time they hit it. And so I don't think that that is the same length as the movie. I didn't double check, but something's telling me it was not because that scene is very drawn out. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, very long, dramatic. We see all the different parts of the ship and everything. So I don't think that was 37 seconds. And I also don't think that the, because I thought maybe the collision itself, maybe they made that last 37 seconds, but that also gets much longer in the movie. So I'm not sure where that rumor came from of like the movie also having something last for 37 seconds. I'm sure someone is listening in their car or somewhere right now and telling me, no, it was this. I'll find out something when I'm editing and then I'll be wanting to slap myself. Hey, it's Brittany from the future. I am currently editing this episode and I wanted to pop in with a little clarification here. So, turns out if you start timing from around the brief shot of the iceberg right before Frederick Fleet shouts, "Why aren't they turning?" it happens to be 37 seconds from that moment to the moment of the collision. This is really cool because at this point they've already done all that they can do. So during these 37 seconds, we're all waiting with bated breath. And that's super effective because you realize how long 37 seconds can feel, but you also realize how short that amount of time is, historically speaking. Because in comparison, in the movie, it takes well over 2 minutes from the moment they spot the iceberg to the moment they hit it. But this 37 second pause that they give us before the collision is a cool nod to how long this moment roughly lasted in history. So, yeah, back to the episode. But either way, it's very cool and very interesting attention to detail there. I think it's very interesting with the length, because when you sit there and you watch the movie, you're pretty much sitting there for the time it took the Titanic to sink. So you get an idea of how it really was not that long, because the movie goes by very fast. And so this actually perfectly goes into this Letterboxd review I wanted to read, which I wasn't actually planning on that working so well. It's by Kevin O'Brien, and his review was much longer, but this is just the part that was very interesting to me. He says, "There's a reason James Cameron devotes half of the movie to making you feel the life and joy aboard the ship as fully as you can before getting into the action of the sinking. Not only is he setting up this idea that these are full and meaningful lives that will be lost, but he is exploring how humans experience time. Cameron spends the same amount of time on the first half, on the straightforward romance, as he does on the back half, the sinking ship. The difference between them is that from the moment the ship hits the iceberg, the film switches into real time. Compare this to the first half, which takes place over several days. By making these two halves nearly the same exact running time, what Cameron is suggesting is that several hours can feel as long as several days. Moments can last an eternity, even if they're only a few seconds long. And that's an important concept to sell us on when you want us to believe that Jack and Rose fall so hardly in love that they would both die for each other after a matter of days, that Rose would carry Jack's memory with her for decades. It's been 84 years, but when Rose sees that picture, it's yesterday. Time is the thing we can never let go of, but we can never hold on to it either. We can only hold on to the hands of those we love in the moments we have to hold them. A second can be an eternity, a tragedy can be a heartbeat, and a love can be a lifetime. It's all one and the same." I was like, getting deep on Letterboxd there. Like,
that's our shirt that's coming out, getting deep on Letterboxd. That's super. I mean, I love movies that do that. One of my favorite movies of all time is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And if and at the exact halfway point of the narrative, you spend half the movie with the like golden ticket fiasco, and then the second half of the movie inside the factory, and it's like the same exact length, which is really cool. Another one that does that is Lion King. Half the movie is young Simba, half the movie pretty much, I think it's like 2 or 3 minutes difference, but half the movie is older Simba, which is really cool. But yeah, it's really interesting when James Cameron does it in Titanic, because what was the person's name, the Letterboxd guy? Kevin. When he was saying that it took a few days for Jack and Rose to fall in love and only like this much time for them to lose each other, basically. And so that's really interesting too. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, you could pontificate about time and stuff for days, but I was thinking about that too. I was like, I wonder, it's interesting how this feels like it lasts an eternity. And when something is traumatic and it lasts a long time, it feels like it lasts even longer. Like when you think of the movie, it's almost hard to think of it of anything else besides the sinking in some regards, unless you've seen it 100 times like you have, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. It's really interesting.
It is. And I loved that, the way he said that that's a really important thing to do if you want to sell us on the Jack and Rose romance. Because we've talked about it ad nauseum, how that's a part of the movie a lot of people take issue with. But I just loved reading that because I was like, yes, oh my God, absolutely. Ah, that just got me. The way the two halves of the movie are genuinely around the exact same runtime, but the fact that the first half takes place over a few days and then the second half is real time. For some reason, I never really thought about it that way.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Jam Cam was inspired by Willy Wonka, I guess.
Jam Cam. I know, I love calling him that. But yeah, that was just something really interesting I wanted to share, especially because, you know, we're getting into the sinking section. Really interesting review there, Kevin, on Letterboxd. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. So, getting into the scene, or right before the part that starts this scene, there was a deleted scene of Molly Brown taking over some rowing duties in Lifeboat 6. And this is historically accurate. She was said to have helped. I kind of wish it was included. It's a very short scene, but I think she calls someone Sonny again in this scene. And it's like, Molly Brown's just that salt of the earth woman who just calls everyone Sonny.
Sorry, sir. Oh!
Like a duck with a broken wing. Did you ever rowed a boat before, Sonny?
No, ma'am.
Give me that oar. I'll show you how it's done.
Too many Sonnies, Kathy Bates.
But you know, it's a nice, you know, historically accurate scene. And there's a scene with her later on that is also somewhat historically accurate, but kind of flipped in a weird way for whatever reason. And so that makes it somewhat less historically accurate. We'll get to it eventually. I kind of wish that they maybe included this one just to kind of have it balance out a little bit. But it is what it is. As again, I say, I appreciate that James Cameron at least took the effort to write it and shoot it anyway, and that it exists.
Yeah.
So getting into the top of the actual scene, it starts with a return to Jack in the porthole, which we talked about before. They kind of use it as a measurement for the progression of the sinking. And now the camera goes way underwater and we see him now trying to look up and he can't see the surface anymore. It's long gone. And he starts to panic. And something about this, though, is that was just always weird to me, is that this shot is flipped. It's mirrored compared to the last shot of him in the porthole. And I don't know why.
Did not notice that. So the first one, he's facing, like, how can you tell it's flipped, I guess?
Well, because he's facing the other way.
I got it.
He's handcuffed to a pipe, so he can only be facing one way. You know what I mean? He can't turn his whole body around.
Got it. I see what you're saying,
In the first shot, when we're looking at the screen, his face is looking out to our right.
Okay.
But then in this second shot at the porthole, his face is looking out to our left. But it looks like the furniture on the inside has flipped as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Maybe it's mirrored then. I was going to say they filmed it without him being handcuffed. Like if it was a pickup shot or something, then maybe they could have done it, just made a mistake. But
Maybe that's why.
Because what happens a lot of times, you're like, oh man, it would have been really cool if we had Jack looking at the window and that would be a cool effect to see the rising of the water. Okay, and then they come back in, you know, a couple months later and film just that scene, which is probably pretty easy enough to shoot.
But you would think that they'd remember. With all the attention to detail, you'd think that they would look back at the shot to make sure, okay, which way were you standing, you know?
Yeah, that's true, yeah, I don't know. But then also, why would he, with that same argument, why would he have flipped it? It's just strange.
That's what I'm saying. I don't understand why it's flipped, because it does look like there's a desk behind him. And in one shot, it's on the other side, and then the other shot, it's on the other side.
He must have just not thought anyone would notice, I guess.
I know, but it's just weird. And ever since I noticed it, it just bothers me because he can't turn his body around.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. Every time I think about it, I try to think of other ways. I'm like, could he still be? I'm like, no, it's definitely flipped. I don't know.
We'll ask Cameron when he comes on.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. When James Cameron comes on the podcast, we'll ask him.
That's the one question we ask him.
Watch him be like, I didn't notice that.
Now I got to add that to the list.
Yep. Now I got to go in and flip it back. Yeah. But either way, it's still a great measurement of the progress of the sinking and showing how creepy it is. Jack starts screaming for help. Can anybody hear me? Hello, help me. And he's banging his handcuffs on the pipe to try to make noise and everything. And according to James Cameron on the audio commentary, those are historically accurate handcuffs. So
nice. But the porthole is backwards.
We got the historically accurate handcuffs that no one is going to be able to see close enough.
Oh, goodness.
But we're going to flip that porthole shot. Oh, man. But yeah, so this whole bit with Jack screaming and seeing the water creeping in, right? And the way his voice is muffled, like his screams are muffled. There's no one around in the hallways. He's just trapped in there. And I said in my notes that it's moments like this that verge on horror.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of people call Titanic a horror movie on some level. They're like, it definitely dabbles in that genre a little bit.
Yeah.
Especially with some visuals we'll see later on. But moments like this for sure, because you get that feeling every time. Like, I genuinely get scared because the water is almost acting like a villain, right?
Oh, I was anxious. Yeah, I was like, my leg was, I was like bouncing my leg. I was like, the whole sequence is very anxiety ridden.
Mm-hmm. But I wrote, with the way the water is creeping in, I wrote, the water doesn't care.
It doesn't.
But you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. This is just the situation. There's like nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
That's what's so scary about it, though. The way it just creeps in and zero regard because it's just water. Like, this is just what happens.
It reminded me of the 1958 movie, The Blob, with Steve McQueen.
Mm.
I don't know if you've seen. You might have seen the sequence if you haven't seen the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But basically, they're in the freezer and the blob goes under the door and then you find out that the blob doesn't like the cold, and then it comes back out. But it reminded me of that when I watched this. It's one of my favorite movies. So
yep, when it comes like seeping through the doors, mm-hmm, and stuff.
Yeah,
kind of. Yeah,
it's very much. I mean, that was like one of the, not the original disaster movie, but a very influential disaster movie. So
mm-hmm. Run, don't walk.
Yeah,
from the blob. Isn't that the?
Is it Run, Don't Walk?
I think it was.
Was it really? Why? Wait, what? Why do you know that? I hope that that's it and that you remembered that for some reason.
So, on the historical commentary, they claimed that it was real ocean water that they were using when they filmed the movie, but other people complain that the water is way too clear, which we see a little later in this scene. Like, the water is kind of crystal clear.
Like, if they use the ocean water from the Pacific or something. Because there are parts in the ocean that are pretty clear. I mean, if you go to Hawaii, it's like you can see to the bottom. But
oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know.
But I think middle of the North Atlantic, it probably would have been a little murkier.
Yeah, oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For like accuracy, visual accuracy.
For accuracy purposes, yeah.
So it cuts from Jack screaming and the water seeping in to Rose running through first class corridors looking for Mr. Andrews, and she's just screaming, Mr. Andrews, just looking for him. And I said, I always thought, how did she find him? Like, this ship is huge.
2,200 people.
And it was just always kind of funny to me because if you just see it, I love the score at this moment, by the way, too. Because it's like zhung dung, just makes this like noise right when she stops at like an intersection of hallways and turns around. It's just like this little swell of a moment there, and it just always gives me chills coming right off of those creepy seeping in water shots, because it's really like, okay, things are happening now. Like, the ship is sinking. Yeah, so it was always just kind of funny because when you cut to just the shot of her screaming for Mr. Andrews, you could just think that she has just been running around screaming his name, hoping she'll find him, you know? And she just happens to find him. But I try to piece things together in my head. And I'm like, well, no, obviously she probably asked around, have you seen Mr. Andrews? Do you know where he might be? Where's the last place you saw him? Oh, he was over near so-and-so. Okay, she runs in that direction, then starts shouting for him. Whatever, mm-hmm. you know. But still, I just kind of, it's just kind of funny to think that she just ran around this entire ship just screaming for Mr. Andrews. Anyway, so she finds him. She asks, where would the Master at Arms take someone under arrest? And he tells her, like, what? No, you got to get to a boat right away. And she says that she's doing it with or without his help, but without will take longer. And so then Andrews gives her directions in like this very panic-stricken moment, and he's telling her all these detailed directions, and she, you can see you can see it on Rose's face. She's like, okay, what? Oh, ooh, okay. She's like trying to remember. And this is just so funny to me. I'm probably going to ruin the scene for people right now by sharing this, but I can't watch this scene without laughing in my head because I think of this meme edit that someone did. Like, we talked about memes are ruining film, but it's absolutely hysterical. And I will play a clip of it in this episode here, because it's too funny and you guys need to laugh. Someone did an edit, and this is kind of an underrated video in the Titanic fandom, I guess, because it's been up for 11 years, but it only has 200,000 views. So there's quite a few Titanic fans out there who have never seen this. So the video is called Thomas Andrews Explanations. And the description is, Rose thought it would take longer without Mr. Andrews' help. And so they did an edit where they just chop up his directions and they repeat it and loop it over and over and over again. And they chop it up so it sounds like he's saying different things in different orders, but they just loop it over and over and over again.
Like when you turn left and you go down the corridor, then you make another left and then the right.
Yeah. And then it keeps cutting back to that one shot of Rose looking confused. It's just, it's absolutely hysterical. So I will play a clip of it right now.
Mr. Andrews, thank God. Where would the Master at Arms take someone under arrest?
Well, you have to get to a boat right away.
No, I'm doing this with or without your help, sir. But without will take longer.
Take the elevator to the very bottom and go to the left. Then go right, then go to the left. And left again at the stairs, down the crewman's passage. Then go right, go to the left. Then go right, and left again at the stairs. You come to a long corridor. Go to the left. Then go right, then go to the left. And left again at the stairs, down the crewman's passage. Then go right, go to the left.
Whoever made that needs a trophy. That's amazing.
His tone of voice every time it repeats, go to the left.
And then the left. Still very proper.
Every time he tells her to go to the left, it's go to the left. The left is always very important. Go to the left.
Oh, man. That's really good.
The comments were making me laugh so hard. Someone said, I need the 10-hour version.
Yeah.
Oh, I look for 10
that's
hours.
That's so good.
I hope you guys got a good laugh out of that, because that never fails to get me. What's also kind of funny about this as well is that the directions are not necessarily accurate to the actual layout of the ship.
Come on, James Cameron.
Again, yeah. Which is also ironic that it's coming from Thomas Andrews, of all people. The architect, the literal shipbuilder, is giving Rose historically inaccurate directions.
I also love that it kind of implies, not the inaccuracy part, but the fact that he knows this off the top of his head implies that, like, in real life, he had to memorize probably the layout of most of the ship, and he thought of it as lefts and rights and stairs and corridors, and he'd be able to just recall it to someone like that probably, which is really cool.
Which is obviously, I guess, why Rose was looking for him in particular.
Yeah.
When he tells her, take the elevator to the very bottom and go to the left, right away, there would be a problem. So apparently if you get out of the elevator and go to the left, there's a wall. There's nowhere to go on the actual Titanic. Yeah. So Rose would have been out of luck right away.
Well, at least the handcuffs are accurate.
Exactly. We got the accurate handcuffs, but not the accurate geography. But and it also was interesting to me, too, because I thought Thomas Andrews probably wouldn't tell Rose to take the elevator to the very bottom if he knew the progress of the sinking at that point.
Yeah.
And then James Cameron said the same thing. He said on the audio commentary, it would be very unlikely for him to lead Rose into the flooding decks by herself, but they needed it for the scene.
Yeah, it happens.
Because then also I thought too, he would have known that the elevators were closed.
Yeah, I was even wondering if the elevators would work.
Because like, wouldn't he have probably been one of the people who like recommended maybe, you know, stop the elevators, you know?
Yeah, and then the elevator guy was just standing there like human shield style instead of just like closing. Because there's like an actual gate, isn't there?
I know. Why didn't he just close like, that? Just
close the gate. No.
I'm sorry. The lifts are closed. It's like, then why don't you close them?
Yeah.
Instead of just standing there. Oh, man. And also, I feel like all Rose really remembered from those directions were take the elevator to the very bottom, go to the left, and then down the crewman's passage. I feel like those are like the only things she remembered.
Yeah, because she looked at the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. When she gets down there, she's like, crew passage. Okay. Yeah. And then I feel like that's all she remembered. And then she was like, okay, now I'm just going to start screaming for Jack because yeah. I'm close enough.
Yeah, pick the right door and then you're good.
But we're not there yet. But yeah, that was just something I thought.
Spoiler alert.
Then it cuts back to Jack in the room, handcuffed to the pipe. And he mutters to himself, this could be bad.
Could be.
It could be. It could be bad.
I do love his optimism, though. Like, he's joking and stuff a little bit. Kind of a lot of bit, but yeah. I mean, but it is Jack. Like, that's his character. He's very positive.
But I just thought it was funny, though, because again, in my notes, it says, Jack is providing us with legendary understatements. Because earlier in the movie, remember when he overheard the stuff about the collision and he said, this is bad?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's true.
So once again, he's saying this could be bad.
This one could be.
Let's see, buddy. You're handcuffed to the pipe on a sinking ship. I'd say it's pretty bad. So in my notes, I said that I probably would have cut that line.
Mm.
Because it's like, who was it for? Like, was it for himself just to, like, talk to himself in that moment?
It's always weird when characters talk to themselves in movies. And TV, you can kind of, like, sitcoms, you can get away with it. But, like, in movies, when it's very, like, when it's a realistic movie, it's always kind of weird to me when characters talk to themselves. I'm always like, would that make sense to, would I say that to myself?
Exactly.
It's always, like, a risky choice to make if you're a director.
Yeah, because I was thinking that. I was like, was that for us? I'm like, obviously we know it's bad.
Yeah, I mean, I know too, like Cameron likes to leave in little ad-libs here and there too. Like,
yeah, because I feel like it probably just would have been a little better if, you know, he's there and he's just stressed and looking around because he's alone.
Yeah.
And then you just see the water come in and then he starts swearing and going off, you know. But I mean, I've seen the movie so much that I can't imagine it without the this could be bad, you know, but this really does, again, when it starts flooding through or like underneath the door into his room and he just starts panicking. And now it's like, yeah, you don't know how fast or slow this is going and it's coming in, you know, so he's just trying to either break that pipe, you know, rip it off his hands, like anything he could do. And he puts his foot up for leverage against the wall. And I love how when we get back to him later, there's scuff marks on the wall there from where his foot was. And I always really liked that. That's nice continuity.
I saw that actually and I noted it. I didn't connect it to his feet, but I was like, is that like blood or what is that thing on the wall? But,
right. Okay. I always thought that too when I was younger.
Nice touch.
And so I know we previously spoke about how we didn't really know how necessary the drama of framing Jack for stealing the necklace and then putting him in ship jail, how necessary all that drama was. But it did bring us here And we did get the resolution in this to that whole thing a little later in this scene.
Yeah, really quick too. It wasn't harped on.
I'm not gonna ask you about that yet, but I will say that it did get us. It did bring us here, which I think is a good tension builder, and also allows Rose the chance to physically save Jack, which I think is kind of cool. I like the way it plays out.
And I don't know if I mentioned this before, but it's also kind of cool that, like, if you are thinking, oh, maybe she still thinks he stole it, she still goes and gets him. And so that's like a testament to, like, she doesn't, I guess, really care over the alternative is Cal. So,
right.
So it's still like, I'd rather be with this thief and, like, save his life. Or at the very least, he's still like a human being who, like, deserves to have a chance to survive this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After that shot of Jack panicking, trying to get out of there, that's when we see Rose running to the elevators. And also interesting to note about this is that the route that she's running is, it's the same exact route as the chase scene with her,
okay,
Jack, nice, and Lovejoy. And so I wrote in my notes that this is the ode to Titanic effect all over again, which was when we saw that beautiful King of the World sequence and then the iceberg collision sequence. We're seeing all the same places again, but now in panic mode.
Yeah.
It's the same sort of thing. We're seeing this route that she had taken before with Jack when they were all happy and carefree, and now she's running the same way, except now she's running to save Jack and the ship is sinking. And
yeah, you experience every part of the ship at least two different times, pretty much.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. So yeah, so the guy is saying, sorry, but the lifts are closed, and she just pushes him into that elevator and says that she's through being polite, god damn it, now take her down, and just tells him, edec. Cuts back to Jack again, water is rushing in even more now, and he's trying to pull these handcuffs off of his hand, but you know, it's not happening, but he's trying. And I do love how stressed Leo really is acting in this scene. Like, he's turning beet red. Like, he is genuinely really trying to get these cuffs off. And I always really liked that. Rose is in the elevator and she goes down and then the water comes rushing in. It would have been very cold.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, because the water, I don't know a lot of what the physics of water is really, but I was wondering if the temperature would increase when it came into the ship or not. But not, I mean, that's a lot of water to bring the temperature up on, but
you're not exposed to the elements when you're in the ship either. Like,
there's no wind chill. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
Because that's something I've always thought about. Because people say throughout the course of the movie, when they're like running around in the ship, in the water, people are like, they would have gotten hypothermia like way quicker because they're in cold water. And I'm like, well, it is a little bit different because they don't have frigid cold air and other factors. But so I wrote down on James Cameron's audio commentary, he just said that he thought that overhead shot in the elevator of the water rushing in, he's like, I just thought that looked cool. he was like, I just thought that was cool. I'm like, okay. And he says that, you know, that area of the ship probably would have flooded fairly early. So that's all accurate, he says. Yeah. So Rose gets out at E-deck, and this is where her and Jack got off the elevator and ran the other direction away from Lovejoy. They make a point to show E-deck on both scenes, like the sign that says E-deck.
Mm-hmm.
So she gets off and she's looking around, and then I feel like most fans of the movie remember the elevator guy fondly with,
I'm back! I'm going back up! I'm going back up!
This voice.
Yeah, I laughed at that part.
Yeah, it's like, okay. I never really understood why he's saying it like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. As a kid, I didn't know. I was like, I thought the water was automatically sending him up or something as a kid.
Yeah.
And it was like out of his control and he's like, I'm going back up. But I do love that shot of the water cascading out of the elevator as it rises up.
Yeah, it is a really good shot. Yeah.
It's crazy, right? Rose just stands there and looks at it for a second and she's like shaking a little bit because it's like, that's one of the first moments that she's seeing of this opulent elevator having water pouring out of it. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So All right, so now in my notes, I said, this is where they start to shout each other's names a little too much. And what's interesting is that they did not say their names that much in the screenplay. So it's a little frustrating because a lot of people make fun of the screenplay. They're like, oh yeah, what a great written screenplay. Just a bunch of Jacks and Roses in there, right? And it's just like, well, actually, no, that wasn't in the screenplay. It was an acting thing and an editing thing, which we talked about before. We were like, someone in the editing room should have maybe noticed that and somehow cut some of them out or cut down on it. Or James Cameron should have noticed when they were filming that, like, hey, maybe you guys are saying each other's names a little too much. So, I don't know. Or
well, Rose was, because Jack didn't know she was there. But I guess, like, what else would they have said?
When they're looking for each other, yeah. But then later in the scene, pretty soon.
He says, like, oh, look in there, Rose. It's maybe in there.
Yes,
Rose.
Exactly.
God, I thought you meant, like, when they're...
when they're looking for each other. Yeah, no, are they supposed to be quiet? They're supposed to just go, hey!
Yeah.
What else are they going to say?
That's what I thought you were referring to, because I was like, wait, what? But okay, totally, yeah, they do kind of say it a lot.
Yep, and so I was annoyed, because I was reading in the screenplay, and the names weren't written in there, so I was like, so they were just saying that.
It's like one of those things, these are two younger actors. They still have, I'm probably going to get flack for this, but I've always thought the worst performances in Titanic were, like, the top billed actors, I think. Were the best performances, I think, were, like Andrews and, like, Kathy Bates, Whereas, like, I hate to say it, but Leo and Kate Winslet, I think, give some of the weaker performances. Not bad performances, but just weaker compared to other things. But I was going to say, they're younger actors. Panic is kind of a hard thing to learn how to do as an actor convincingly. A lot of people resort to, like heavy breathing. You see that a lot in TV shows. And then other things is you say the name of the person you're scene mate. So, like, you'll say their name a lot. So that's probably what was going on here, is they were just trying to convey panic where there might not have been a lot of dialogue, period. And so adding a name, it's just like these psychological things that people do subconsciously when they're trying to act early on, I guess. Right. This all makes sense.
Yeah. No, it does. But yeah, I said this scene is one of the worst culprits for that argument of them saying their names too much.
It's probably, probably the worst one, unless I'm missing one later on.
And I said it's just really distracting once you pay attention to it, because it's just the two of them. You know what I mean? There's no reason.
Who else is there that you can be talking
there's
to?
There's no reason to address them by name that many times.
Yeah.
But...
very true.
So Rose gets down there. She starts, she gets off the elevator, goes down the crew passage, and then she just starts screaming for Jack. And all the debris and luggage and everything that's already floating around, on the historical commentary, they said that probably would have been the case, and that things naturally would have just floated out of rooms or whatever, and that James Cameron was very much like, don't touch anything, because this is exactly how it would have naturally drifted out. So, like, don't do anything. So Rose starts screaming for Jack, which does make sense in this moment, because she is trying to find him. And then Leo shouts back Rose, and I do always laugh when he shouts her name for the first time, only just because the whole, like, Jack Rose has become like a joke kind of thing. So whenever he shouts her name for the first time, it's just kind of funny, because it's just so, he pauses for a minute to, like, listen to her, and then he's like, Rose!
This sequence has a few unintentionally funny moments, and there's another one too coming up.
Well, I think coming up was intended to be a little bit funnier, but...
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, so she ends up finding him, and they go back and forth saying each other's names a lot right there.
Rose!
Jack!
Rose, I'm in here! Rose!
Jack! I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
That guy loved to put it in my pocket.
I know.
Listen, Rose, you're going to have to find a spare key, all right? Look in that cabinet right there.
And I wrote, I always loved how hoarse Leo's voice is when he says this, though, because it really makes you feel like he really was in there shouting and was out of breath and was really panicking.
Yeah.
He just sounds genuinely hoarse, and it makes him seem a little bit more vulnerable and scared. I always kind of liked that. But yeah, so I might put in a clip of the audio.
It's a little silver one, Rose.
These are all brass ones.
Check right here, Rose. Rose, how did you find out I didn't do it?
I didn't. I just realized I already knew.
He definitely says it a lot.
Yeah, and then she goes, I didn't. I just realized I already knew. And they have this little moment where they're looking at each other, just kind of smiling. And then he's like, keep looking. Oh.
Yeah. And I like that they don't stress her epiphany. It was obscene prior, like throughout any of this thing. You just kind of like slowly come to that. And then she gets there and we find out that she just already knew. We don't find out the moment she realizes it. We just kind of find out that she already knew.
Yeah, I was wondering what you thought about the resolution to that drama.
Yeah, like that kind of drama is necessary sometimes, but how it's resolved is key. Like, so this was resolved really, really well, I think. Just real quick line of dialogue, nothing crazy.
And I wrote in my notes that that line also has some old Hollywood flair to it. I didn't. I just realized I already knew.
I didn't, but I know. Yeah, it's almost like you could have heard that in another movie.
So Rose is looking around for the key. She can't find it. Obviously, they showed Lovejoy take the key earlier. He took the key and put it in his pocket. So we know that there's no key there.
Mm-hmm.
So while she's looking for the key, though, it does this quick shot of the bow sinking underwater. And that's the one shot we get of the bow slipping under the surface.
Yeah.
That always stood out to me. You hear the creaking and the groaning of the ship as it goes down a little bit. James Cameron said that particular shot was a model, like a smaller model. But he says that it was very important to him because it's the most recognizable spot on the wreck to this day. It's intact, and it's also just a very recognizable piece of Titanic, and it's a recognizable and important place in the movie as well. We had King of the World, we had flying, and now we're seeing it sink beneath the surface. And it's just another one of those things where we're seeing such a prominent spot disappear.
Well, also, as the two characters are reuniting again, the point that was like one of the most important to their bond, it was now going below the surface. So like kind of foreshadowing.
Oh my God. I didn't even think about it like that. Oh my God. But see, like, you think of new things all the time. Wow. Now, see, that one little shot just hit me different now when I think about it. Because you're so right.
Cool. Yeah, it's a really quick, it's a quick cut scene, but it's like really important to, like, the symbolism of it.
You're so right. They just reunited, but this is almost a foreshadowing of, like, it's not going to end well for them, you know?
Yeah, because that's like the bow signifies kind of their relationship. And now, like, that's the part that people remember the most are the scenes from that very part of the ship, I think.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I liked in the historical commentary, Don Lynch commented on that scene of the bow, and he said that it will never be above water again. And just something about that sentence just, yeah.
That's a good...
It just struck me. I was like, because that's why it's important to see that moment, because it's never going to be above that surface line again. That hit me. So then it cuts back, and Rose is like, you know, there's no key. There's no key. And he's like, all right, Rose, whatever, you know. He's like, you're going to have to get some help. It'll be all right. I love the way she kind of looks like a sad little puppy dog there for a minute. Like, she makes this sad little pouty face. She's like, like, she doesn't know. Is it going to be okay? I don't know. And then, because she knows that she has to leave him.
Like, I just found you and now I have to leave, yeah.
Aw, that's so cute. I just found you and now I have to leave you again. That's a very teenager way of thinking.
Yeah.
And then also her walking back over to him and giving him another kiss before she leaves, saying, I'll be right back. And then Jack Dawson, the comedian that he is, saying, I'll just wait here.
Ba-doom-tsh.
That always gets a laugh.
Yeah.
But it is true, though. Like, people tried to call Titanic a rom-com, and then someone said, just because Jack Dawson is a comedian doesn't make Titanic a rom-com. Even, like, as we get into more serious moments, he is cracking jokes. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Anyway. All right, so now I said that this is where the sound design gets crazy, because we're just hearing all the creaking and the groaning and the bending of metal and all this stuff going on in the ship. And it's just so good. And it's also great because Rose is alone now, so it makes everything that much scarier and heightened. Like, Rose running around alone in an empty ship that is quite literally a maze is, that's like a scene out of a horror movie when you're running around looking for help. So she's running around asking for help. Is there anybody down here? We need help. Hello. And that one guy comes out of nowhere and starts running, and he's all panicked, and she's like, oh, thank God, help me. Oh, wait.
Where was that first guy going, by the way? Like, why was he still there? Like, the other guy looked like he was a worker.
Yeah, yeah.
Or he crew, was a steward, yeah. But the first guy just looked like some random citizen just...
Well, because that was the thing. I feel like, I don't know if I had mentioned that in the last scene, but that was a big reason why a lot of people in third class died. It wasn't because that they were being kept forcibly behind gates. Like, we already went over that. Like, that wasn't necessarily the case. But it was such a maze down there that a lot of people just could not find their way out.
Or if they were sleeping and they're in a room by themselves, maybe, and they didn't even know what was going on.
Yeah, because where she went running to, it's all dry up there, right? You know, currently. So, yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
Everyone else is gone. So if you were still asleep, I mean, you're a heavy sleeper, I guess, maybe. But yeah, but that is definitely part of it, was that people just could not find their way out of there.
Yeah.
So this is when Rose just stands there in the empty hall, and they zoom out. And this has become a meme in my household. Rose just standing there going,
help!
That is a meme between my mom and I. We don't know what it is about it that's so funny to us, but it's just so funny.
So every time she's doing something in a unique cadence and she has to, like, still keep the accent, like, every once in a while she'll do something in a weird tone like that.
Which is funny, though, because I looked back at her screen test, and she had a really good American accent in her screen test.
Oh, okay.
It really wasn't bad. And so then I think when they started filming, either it was because they were filming over the course of 7 months and it was difficult to keep that accent up perfectly that long, or it was just James Cameron told her to not try it so much and do a little bit more of a transatlantic kind of old school thing. Or you
get more emotionally invested in, you're acting, you're trying to get into the performative side of it. You go back to your natural state more, I think, when it comes to your accent, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, so she probably was thinking less about, I need to do this accent, and more about, I just need to convey the emotion. And
whereas in the screen test, she's like, I gotta nail the accent. So
exactly.
She's not, yeah.
Bingo. So just about now is when all the lights go out. And when the lights go out, you really hear the groaning in that moment. Horror! And I think to myself, I can't even imagine. Could you imagine if the lights just went out then and there and she was stuck?
Oh, yeah. Like, and it didn't come, it didn't come back on.
It is over. There's no getting out of there.
They're all dead.
Yep.
Everyone down there.
No getting out.
I mean, he did the second one, but you can see a lot of Alien in this scene, in this whole sequence down below.
And that, when you said to convey panic, you'll switch into heavy breathing and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she's doing a lot of that right now.
He's definitely doing a lot of heavy breathing.
But I mean, I think it's warranted.
Yeah.
But I always love this scene in theaters, though, because the theater goes pitch black, you know, because all the light from the screen is gone. The screen is pretty much what's mainly illuminating the theater. So you're right there with Rose in this scene every time. and you realize how terrifying it would be. But interesting too, though, another thing that Kate does, she does this sound. I don't know how to describe it, but it's mixed in with the heavy breathing where she goes like, she makes this weird sound.
Gasping.
It's like half nasal, half gasp, but it's like she does it all the time. And she does it after this when she's like catching her breath. So then she starts asking for help again, just saying,
hello?
And so then suddenly, right then, this steward comes around the corner. It's like, oh, miss, you shouldn't be here. And just grabs her hand and starts taking her wherever. And this is another part where her accent and delivery always stood out to me. She goes, please, or whatever. She goes, I need your help.
Yeah. Must nail accent.
just always stands out to me. But yeah, so he's just talking to her saying like, oh, there's no need to panic. And she's like, I'm not panicking. And she's just so fed up with, you know, people telling her what to do, people not listening to her. So she just punches this guy square in the nose. She has just had enough. She said she is through being polite. She is done.
There's no need to panic.
No, I'm not panicking.
Come along.
You're going the wrong way. Let go of me. Listen!
The hell with you.
Funniest part in the movie, by the way.
So she punches the guy in the face, and in the audio commentary, James Cameron said, the steward is assuming she's a distraught female, and Rose is all about wanting people to listen to her, so that's what you get if you don't listen to Rose. You get punched in the face. Yeah. Oh, and also just another side note from the historical commentary. They said that being on that set, you really could get lost in it. It was...
Oh, yeah.
It was totally 360, as Alexandra said. All those hallways down there were truly... They were following her, and it was just all a maze. You could really get lost, so that's crazy.
Cool.
This killed me. So she punches the guy in the nose... And he says, to hell with you, right? And she just kind of, in the theatrical cut, you know, she just stands there, like starts heavy breathing a little bit. She's, well, okay, whatever, right? Well, in the screenplay, there was originally another line in there. I read this and I was taking my notes at like midnight in my bed as I was reading it. And I was laughing so hard to myself just thinking about our conversation, like what our conversation would be about this. Okay, so here's what it was going to be. She was going to punch him. He was going to say, to hell with you. And Rose was going to say, I can't even say it. Okay.
James Cameron, what have you done?
Yep, he was going to have a movie action line. So ready? To hell with you. See you there, Buster.
Oh my goodness. See you there, Buster.
I couldn't.
There's so many layers of why that shouldn't have been said in this movie. It's like referring to like the fact that of her death way too aggressively. Because like, this is before Iron Man. Okay, it all changed.
I'm sorry. I laughed so hard when I read that. I said no. Way. There's no way. I want to see if there was any blurb about why that was cut. I was trying to remember. It just said, Rose's line, see you there, Buster, was cut in post because Cameron felt her punch was the stronger of the two moments.
Yeah, you don't want the punch. You don't want the punch and the see you there, Buster. You got to pick one.
And you're not going to cut the punch.
You're not going to cut the punch. It's the best part.
Oh, that was great.
If this guy survived the Titanic, his whole life, he's going to be remembering, I was trying to save this lady, and she just punched me. And that's his story.
Another great thing, was that in this scene, this was supposed to be the scene that gave us symmetry to the spitting scene with Jack.
That was going to be where she spits?
So she was going to punch him. She was going to say, "See you there, Buster." And she was going to spit after him.
I give up. All right, guys. Thanks for listening.
Okay, wait. I was like, why did James Cameron write in the spitting symmetry for that scene, but it was Kate Winslet who had to think about it with the Cal scene?
Wait, so she was going to spit Cal and this guy?
No. She was going to hit Cal with a hairpin or something, remember?
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Kate was like, no, I should spit at him. And then James Cameron was like, oh, yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah.
But in the screenplay, it was already written that she spits after the steward just the way Jack taught her. It was written in the screenplay.
This totally, like, insignificant character is going to get the Chekhov's gun of the spit.
Exactly.
That's insane.
I was shocked when I read that. I was like, what?
That's insane. I mean, you got to make mistakes before you make a masterpiece, I guess.
But really, I was like, whoa. Thank God for collaboration, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just crazy. I was like, how was that written in there but didn't think of to... Yeah, that was just kind of crazy to me.
Yeah.
So as she's leaning against the wall out of breath after this ordeal, I noticed as well that the score here, it sounds like a heartbeat. And that was something that I always subconsciously noticed, because I remember all my years growing up watching it, I always felt like I could just hear her heartbeat or whatever. And then I realized, oh, wait, no, that's the score.
The hell with you.
That's part of the score.
That's cool.
And that's just perfect. So as she's leaning there, she looks ahead of her and she sees a fire axe, or just an axe encased in glass. All right, I'm just going to go with this. So let's crack it open and just take this with me. I'm going to go run. Hopefully this works.
I'm not sure if it was intentional, but I do love the irony of the fire hose and the fire axe while all this water is just being deluged into the...
True.
Yeah.
James Cameron said he loves that shot of her running with the axe. Like,
yeah.
Because, you know, he loves his female action heroines.
Yeah.
And this is where Rose kind of taps into that side of James Cameron movie making. And he said that she goes from victim to hero in this moment, where she discovers there's something she can do. After that, it cuts to a brief shot of Captain Smith looking onto the forward well deck near where the bow is, and all the water is just rushing in. And again, this was a shot that we saw earlier of Jack and Rose running out of the cargo hold and onto that deck right there. That's the exact view that we had in that scene from where Murdoch was looking at them.
Nice.
So now this is, again, the same sort of thing, except now it's flooding and there's a flare going off. And again, I said it's the ode to Titanic effect all over again. And it's also nice to just return to Captain Smith there for a minute. And, like, you know, he's looking at it. He's like, we do not have much time. And again, just sad to see the bow section of the ship just be flooding with more and more water. I thought it was interesting, too, because they show all this water flooding, and then we cut back to Rose, and she finds her way back to that staircase, or that little stairwell, and the water has risen.
Yeah.
You know, it's much higher than it was when she left. That's another small way that sort of showed us the pace of which the ship is sinking, that it's going pretty fast. She gets to the stairs, and she just whispers, oh my God, to herself. That I agree with. I would say, oh my God, to myself out loud.
Yeah, you know, like something like that, yeah. Or like like swear to yourself maybe or something, but...
Yeah. There's more crazy cut lines coming later in this scene that I will die laughing over. So she gets down there. She takes off her coat because she realizes it's just going to weigh her down. And when she looks down the hallway to like see real quick, and then that fuse cracks and it's like really, really loud.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, is that so loud when you see it in a theater? And then sometimes I'm just so into the movie no matter where I watch it, and I always forget about that. And then when it pops, I genuinely get a jolt of like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's a little jump scare. Again, horror. They're putting a little jump scare in there too.
It's a romantic horror.
A rom horror.
The rom horror.
So yeah, so when Rose realizes she's gonna have to get in there up to her neck, that is a genuine reaction from Kate when she gets into the water. It really was cold. And that's the worst part about getting into a pool or getting into anything, is when you get your core wet.
Yeah.
That's the worst part. I can't do it.
Yeah. Like, and they always say it's like ripping a Band-Aid off, right? But it's still like, man, I'd rather rip a Band-Aid off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she has to hold herself with the pipes because the water is over her head. So she has to shimmy her way on these pipes till she gets to where it's not over her head anymore. But as a kid, I never understood this for some reason. And I thought she was just like, it was like a monkey bars kind of thing. Yeah, I was like just
scaling the top.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, she's just being cool. Like, yeah. I was like, okay. And I actually remember going to the park as a kid. Like, whenever I was at a park, I would try to do this on the lower monkey bars. I'd be like, making like the Rose noises. Oh, man. Because, yeah, she makes those noises a lot in this scene. But again, sound design is great here because the groaning and creaking is super loud and there's no score. And when I kept thinking back to my experience seeing it in Dolby, this was one of the first scenes that came to my mind because it was so loud when there's like one part where it's like... like this noise is just so loud. And yeah, it's just, it's perfect. And of course, and she's doing all of this while holding an axe. So this is very much James Cameron's strong female character moment for Rose here in Titanic.
Yeah, and I like it too that she is, and I think we've mentioned or someone mentioned it before, you have the Sarah Connor and you have like the Ellen Ripley, who are the, you know, like they're like the buff ones, but she's just like, she's kind of dainty. She's got like her dress or whatever, that thing on, and like, and she's even like not really sure of herself. She's confident in herself, but she's not like confident that she in her capabilities of in this situation. And it's that drive and the tenacity that carries her through and ultimately overcomes these obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I love that. I had written in my notes, like we're seeing this heroic kind of moment for her. I feel like in any other movie, she would have just suddenly switched into like action woman for the rest of the movie.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And I said, but Cameron doesn't let us forget that she has never done anything like this before in her life.
Yeah.
And we get that in the very next scene here where she makes it back into the room and they say each other's names again. And she pulls up the axe from beneath the water and just says, will this work? And he goes, I guess we'll find out. And he tells her to try a couple practice swings over there. And she's like, all right. So she hits it. And then he says, try to hit the same mark again, Rose. You can do it. And then she hits it again, like a good 12 inches away from the...
That part's funny, actually. Yeah, that's a good joke.
No, exactly. That was supposed to be humorous. In the annotations in the screenplay, it said that Kate didn't even realize that all of this was going to play as funny because she was just too into the moment as the character, that she wasn't thinking about this as a funny scene. She was just genuinely like doing whatever.
Yeah.
That's just cute. But this is what I meant when I said he doesn't let us forget that she's never done this before in her life. You know, she still can't hit the axe, you know, perfectly.
Yeah, which is probably a hard thing to do for most people. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's like even if you try to hammer a nail, if you've never hammered a nail before, it's hard to get every single time.
Oh, yeah.
Without having your finger on the nail.
And James Cameron, on the audio commentary, he said that he thinks Kate did a good job selling the beginnings of hypothermia in this scene, because if you were chest deep in water like this, you would start having, you know, a shaky, cold mm-hmm. reaction, which we do see her have, but she's also nervous as well.
Where was the level at this point? I can't remember.
Well, when she makes it into the room, it's kind of like waist. Right here. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But when she was making her way down the hallway, it was up to her chest, you know.
Got it. Yeah.
Right now, it's just like a little higher than her waist, kind of. And I do like the way Jack is still teaching her things, though, but not in an overt way. It just kind of happens.
Well, he has to. Yeah, he has to instruct her through this moment.
He says that he trusts her, but then he shields his face and closes his eyes.
And trust has nothing to do with it, dude. It's lucky. You have to rely on luck at this point. Because, I mean, also, you got to think about it, though. At one point, I was like, it would almost have been better if he just broke his hand and got out of that thing. Because, A, it's would have been, I mean, in hindsight, right? It's faster. You're more guaranteed. You have a broken hand, but you're guaranteed to, like, survive sooner. Even if the axe hit his hand, like, it would have been able to get out of, I mean, it would hurt more.
Yeah. And I love the way Rose closes her eyes as well.
Yeah, she's not even looking. You trust me? Okay, good. And then she nails it, like, in the first try, which...
Yeah.
I was trying to... people talk about the door at the end, but I don't even know if that would have been possible.
Yeah, I feel like that a lot of, like, I think the historical commentary, they said that. James Cameron said it on his commentary, and I said it in my notes.
Well, especially if the water is that high, too, you don't even have full function of your abdomen muscles. So, like, it's just arms and shoulder and, like, upper back, pretty much.
Right.
I don't know.
But yeah, James Cameron, he said that even though they've somewhat kicked into action thriller mode here, it still has to be about the dynamics of the relationship and the love story. It's a scene about trust and luck. Even he's not sure that you could get it on the first swing. And I agree. I had written, like, maybe they should have, like, tried it at least twice, maybe. Yeah. I'm like, but then for a movie, that's just, like, wasting time.
Well, the whole movie's about fate, right? So, I mean... Your fate is you get it on the first try, I guess.
By the way, it is a rubber axe, of course.
Yeah.
But what's funny, though, is that because it's rubber, you know, she didn't have to worry about hitting his hand or not. So if you watch it in slow motion, she definitely hit his hand.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So if that was not a rubber axe, Jack would definitely be walking around without a hand right there. Yeah,
well, Leonardo DiCaprio would be walking around still to this day probably without a hand.
Yeah, not just Jack, actually Leo as well. Yeah. Oh, that's funny. And I do love how happy they are when she gets it. You know what I mean?
It is nice, yeah.
And he's such a good, like, morale booster. He's like, you did it! Yeah. Oh, and she's so happy. Okay, so now we get to two other lines here that were cut. After Rose successfully chops the handcuffs, Jack was supposed to say, "Nice work there, Paul Bunyan."
Oh, man. I just want a movie of just the cut James Cameron lines. My next screenplay, I'm just going to, it's going to have a bunch of these lines that James Cameron cut from Titanic, just out of context.
Oh, it's so crazy. Okay, and so...
Oh, man, I'd like to see him explain this one.
Well, because I Googled it, and apparently Paul Bunyan, like, he's a lumberjack in folklore, mm-hmm. but apparently he has some sort of roots in Wisconsin, and that's, like, where Jack is from.
Okay.
So maybe it was supposed to be, like, another connection to that. But I just thought it was just so funny, though, because in the little blurb in the illustrated screenplay, James Cameron said, "Leo always naturalized his dialogue. In rehearsals, he just stopped saying the Paul Bunyan line."
He kept saying Rose, but he stopped saying the Paul Bunyan line. Fantastic.
And then he goes, "I didn't miss that. I assumed he was uncomfortable with it." And then he said that there was already enough, like, the scene was already naturally funny enough without really it. Like, you don't need that as well.
Oh, that's awesome.
Then we get another one right after this that was originally written. So they're making their way out of the room, and now Jack is like fully, his body is all submerged now. Yeah. And, you know, in the movie, it's very natural, I think. He just starts swearing.
Oh shit, this is cold! Oh shit! Shit! Shit!
It was ad-libbed, right?
The original line.
Let's go.
I can't! The original line was, shit, excuse my French.
What? Yes. Oh man, these are awesome. I need these every single episode we do. I want to know all of these. They're getting better as things are more stressful because they make less sense in any of the context that's happening. So, like, early in the movie, it's like, okay, you know, they're just having a conversation. Now it's like they're straight up panicking as the Titanic is literally sinking. And they're saying these colloquialisms that just make no sense.
Excuse my French?
So good.
It's like Jack would not say excuse my French at this point. He's not trying to be proper in front of Rose.
He was teaching how to spit earlier, and now he's, like, worried he's swearing.
Is this? But that wasn't even the whole line. So it's supposed to be, excuse my French. Ow, ow, ow. That is cold.
Oh my goodness.
I said, once again, Leo naturalized this. Thank God.
He just stopped saying it. Leo just stopped saying all my dialogue for some reason.
Oh man. So Jack and Rose, they make their way out of the room. Rose looks down the hallway from the direction she came, and it's all flooding and water's rushing in, and she's like, this is the way out. Little lines like this also seem like, the more I see the movie, the more they stand out to me.
Yeah.
So like, Rose saying this is the way out, sure, like that's fine, but then Jack saying like, we'll have to find another way, come on. I'm like, obviously.
Yeah, it's like the same line basically.
But like, just little things like that have stood out to me the more I watch it. But
yeah, see, I didn't even really notice that. But you saying it actually out loud makes it seem, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, well, obviously, if that's the way out, you have to find another way. It's a little redundant to also say it. I don't know. If she said, like, this is the way out, and then he said, all right, well, we got to go this way then. Come on.
Let's try this way. Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, we'll have to find another way. It's like, obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously, you have to find another way. Just little details. So that is where I have this scene marked as the end.
Sweet.
I feel like we talked on a couple cool things in there.
Yeah.
Had some funny, good laughs as well.
Yeah, this is a fun one.
Between these lines, Thomas Andrews giving those directions.
How's it going to?
Go to the left.
To the left.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Anyway, so that'll just about do it for Can Anybody Hear Me? Scene 24 for us here on the podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. We appreciate it. Follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr. Follow Ethan and I on Letterboxd. Our profiles will be linked in the description of this podcast episode along with everything else. Send us a voicemail. It'd be nice to hear from you. Send us an email, titanicscenebyscene@gmail.com. All of that good stuff. And we will see you in the next scene.
See ya.